Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Jill, who is here to speak with us about a fabulous article she recently wrote in the Practice Corner for our recent newsletter. Welcome, Jill.
Thanks, Jen. Great to be here.
Thanks for being with us. I project there is not a human being on the planet who could not relate, especially now, to what you wrote about in that article.
Yeah. Yeah, it really
so,
was.
Yeah, tell us.
Well, I just reread it, and I was like, wow, it goes a little deep.
It does.
In some places.
It cuts right to it. Yeah. Well, yeah, and you'll talk about it, but that's the beauty of it. It goes deep, and it's every moment of our lives. Mm. It deals with with the nitty gritty fabric. It really brings the two things together. It just shows how it's all one thing. But anyway, for those poor souls who haven't read it, before we get too far.
Actually, I had an experience today that involves pies, Thanksgiving pies, and so I don't. Uh-huh. It kind of illustrates what the article was pointing to. So I don't know. Could I take a minute and just dive into this?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I came across some information that my local food co-op was had some fresh pies that they had just made. And that has been a pull for me all in COVID quarantine because it just seems like there was no fresh pies around. And so I literally, you couldn't hold me back. I like sprinted out the door in line to get the pies. I have one person coming over for Thanksgiving. We're like COVID quarantine buddies. And, I'm just like, there's no stopping my getting pies. And so I got two pies and on the way home and I got into my kitchen and I'm looking at these two pies, right? Two people coming, eating for Thanksgiving, two pies. And suddenly I felt this person just who was very afraid that somehow conditioning was going to make it impossible for us not to eat these pies and just that feeling sick about it. And I was like, it just felt like, we're not going to do that. It's like, we're not going to eat these pies. But now I have these two pies that in some ways I bought them and I have to take care of them, you know? And it occurred to me, I don't even know how to take care of pies. Do I put them in the fridge? So I looked it up, put them in the fridge. So I put them in the refrigerator. And then I realized it was time for me to go I have a commitment to go for a walk during the daytime hours. And so I was like, okay, I got to get it in. So I'm going for a walk. And, the pie thing is kind of around. And it occurred to me, well, maybe I could give most of these pies away. In some sort of neighborhood, I have a neighborhood like chat board, and then I was like, well, okay, well, that seems a little strange in COVID times, but maybe we can try that. And so carved out the proportion for my guests, the proportion for me, and then I have these two beautiful pies, and just put it on the message board, and immediately people, someone responded, and I ended up giving her the pie, and she was like, "You totally made my week with this pie," and so when I was reflecting on all of that today, it just felt like that thing of just if the focus is on care, or if there's some it's not even the focus, it's just some element of care is
orientation.
Orientation. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Then it becomes about caring for the pies, caring for this person's body, caring for the neighborhood that the pies need to find their eater.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. And I'm the facilitator.
And I'm the facilitator of that. And that it didn't have to go in some conditioned disastrous way.
It's some big duality of do, no, I got to do, no, I can't do, I don't want to do that. Okay, I could do that. I could have, because really, I mean, that's what so struck me about your article. So, you know, just talking about that place is spending a lot of time in your home, right? And spending time in your home, as again, I'm sure many, many, if not all of us can relate to, you start to notice, oh, right, gosh, that door doesn't really come off its hinge. And boy, I haven't, underneath the bed is getting pretty gnarly. And,
yeah.
Right? And all those things start to catch your attention. And then there's just, and they're all things to take care of. And they are.
Mm-hmm.
They're all things to take care
mm-hmm.
of. You know, so like your pies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, these are now, I'm now the steward of these
exactly.
pies. And what I loved about your article is how conditioning wants to make all of that a gigantic problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, well, I won't, you know, I mean, you can speak to what you got to in your article, but it was just so beautiful how you saw that that's not it at all. It's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And your pie story shows
mm-hmm.
it's not. It's a just mm-hmm. what now life, what now life, what now life.
Well, and I thank you for that. And I just feel so grateful that I was asked to write that article because I got to that place in the process of writing that. And that really gave me the opportunity to just experience that overwhelm, you know, quote unquote overwhelm of all of this stuff. Because I was really, when I started writing an article, I was really in that moment of, this is, you know, all of this stuff is pulling at me. And then I just got to that moment of like, who is saying this is a problem? You know, and what is really happening with this? And having that opportunity to just explore it. And I found my way to that truth, I guess, which is if I'm in the process of care, then it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what
exactly
is being what conditioning thinks or what the other stuff is. It's just Jill in the process of care. Beautiful place.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
And it's such an Aikido move to get there, because then it really points at the conversation. I don't know if you heard the morning show this morning, but that Christina was having with Sherry and then Sherry and Ashwini afterwards, that place of, you know, I'm caring while I'm doing this and I'm taking care of that, and I'm instead of okay, I've got to do the door and now I've got to do this, and then I can relax and care and
mm-hmm. Oh, that was such a great moment in the radio show. I think Ashwini summarized it in, it's not when I, it's while I.
Exactly.
And that
right. It's not getting it all checked off the list, it's the process of care. So then anything I turn my attention to in caring,
mm-hmm.
I'm in the process of caring.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
whether I finish it, when I finish it, what
mm-hmm.
gets finished, what doesn't, that's completely irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's not this, like you started out saying, this duality of, okay, there are times that I have to do this stuff, and then there is the reward time I get for myself for doing that stuff, and that...
Yeah.
Ego makes it into this thing of like, let's try to reduce the amount of stuff we have to do and expand the amount of time that we have, quote, for ourselves. And that is just, a devil's bargain. It really is. It's such a painful duality.
It's
and,
an absolute trap.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's one thing that I stumbled upon while working on that. Yeah, that we don't have
and
to
you
live
know,
like that.
Jill, yeah, exactly. And the as you describe it, that meta process is so huge also of what it sounds like you're describing is, okay, so you've said yes as a steward, I'll write the Practice Corner article. And so what you did as you were doing that is, okay, well, what's going on right now?
Mm-hmm.
You just look to see. And you
mm-hmm.
realize, oh, there's this process of overwhelm and this and that and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And so in working with that, in turning right towards what was happening right now in this moment, you had this profound awareness that you were then able to write about. It's such a commercial for starting with wherever we are right here, right now. That is our practice. Mm-hmm. That is the portal to all of it, to being here. And actually such a parallel, isn't it? Instead of like, oh God, let me fix all this stuff so that I can make the space to write my newsletter article. Mm-hmm. You turn right towards it and there's your newsletter article.
It makes it so much simpler. It's so much more straightforward in that way. We don't have to seek out looking. It's just, look, it's here. It's right here.
Yeah.
It's all here. Right. Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
Oh, so good. Well, for anyone who has not read it, I highly recommend it. It's not actually the most recent newsletter, if I'm not mistaken. So what folks can do is, you know, the way to get to the newsletter is if you go to our website, you know, livingcompassion.org, and there's that wheel, and then go to the what's new part of the wheel, and then you'll see a bunch of things listed, and it says newsletter. And if you click on that link, you'll get to the most recent newsletter, and on the left-hand side, one of the areas is Practice Corner, and you can read the most recent article, which is also incredibly fabulous, and then just hit next, and you start to go through the archives, and the article that you and I are talking about, Jill, your article, I think is just one behind the most recent one, so I highly recommend people looking it up. Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun for me to reread, too.
Me too. Yeah, good one to record.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, this has been so fun. Thank you so much, Jen.
Well, thanks for being with us, Jill. Yeah. All right. Take good care.
Show. Have a great show. Thanks.
Good night.
Good night.
And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Jill. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
Good. Just, you know, having some post-Mercury excitement. the water stopped running. And as people who have a well, that's an alarming moment. So, yeah. So keep a good thought for it being a little tiny thing.
I hope it comes back soon.
Yeah, me too. Me too. That would be lovely because it's one of those things that, you know, we're really used to as privileged people. You know, you just turn on that tap and there it is. And when you turn on that tap and there it is, and it's kind of a jolt. So, yeah.
Wow.
Keep a good thought for us.
I will keep many good thoughts for you. And I usually think of Mercury in retrograde with regards to technology, but I guess running water is a form of technology.
Yes, it is. So maybe it just didn't happen, you know, right during the big crisis, and now's a good time for it. I don't know. We'll see.
Right.
Lovely. What else is going on?
I really enjoyed that conversation. And,
yes,
me too. What dropped in, Jen and Jill were talking about the moment to write came for Jill, and then she wrote what was there. And what dropped in was the beauty of being at the monastery and the control of information such that I don't get information ahead of time that conditioning can noodle over. Mm-hmm. It's just a real gift. You know, you show up for working meditation or, you know, whatever the next event is and the note is, and you do this now. You don't get tomorrow's note.
Michael. I cannot tell you how over the years, it sounds funny to say, but I've had to fight for it because it's so much a part of how we operate as human beings. So, for me, somebody is going to facilitate a group, say, well, tell them when they walk in the door.
Yes.
You know, don't tell them 2 hours ahead of time because, you know, anything could happen, first of all.
Yes.
And it's exactly what you say. What do we do when we, in quotes, know ahead of time? We knew. Conditioned mind just takes us right out of where we are now and into that. And mm-hmm. what it's doing has nothing to do with what's going on around mm-hmm. the monastery. We talk about it as don't solve problems we mm. don't have.
That is genius.
And again, that's genius. You know, that's the mark of an intelligent, educated person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just worrying about a thousand things that are never going to happen, right? Instead of just the, yeah, but what now?
What now?
Yeah.
Hmm. That's great.
I'm with you. I don't want to know ahead of time. It's just, it's such an illusion.
Yes. 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 I agree.
Yeah.
And I have one announcement here.
Oh, good.
Yes. The
quiet
ego
time.
The ego conversation in conditioned mind is a world of something wrong, not enough. When we give attention to it, that's what we have. Join Sangha this Sunday, November 29th, for Living in Thank You, a guided workshop on gratitude, as we explore giving attention to life and living in gratitude for all that life is.
99.44% of we're missing almost all the time.
Yes.
Right? I mean,
yes. Yes.
Yeah. So that'll be fun to bring some conscious awareness to mm-hmm. what else is so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like running water and how
like
great it is to have it.
Yeah, or lights that come on or cars that start or, you know,
yes.
all these things, cell phones at work or that we haven't lost or computers that, you know, that we live in such a world of everything works.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time it does. It really does. And even when things don't, there's far more that does than doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And as the little write-up says, you know, ego is just constantly focused on the, yeah, but I don't have that, or that's not working, or I didn't get that, or, you know, if all else fails, yeah, but I'm really tired.
Yes.
Wow.
And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can press *6 and then 1 to make guest show and get in the queue. And conversation on one topic and about 5 minutes in length is a great start.
All right.
Speaking of starting, Sherry, I think now is the time.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, sounds good.
Here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Anna from San Carlos, California.
Hi, Anna.
Hey, Anna.
Hi. I'm so excited to get on.
it's like, hear your voice.
Yeah, I thought I would get on, and I'm just really excited to get on. It's really good to be on. I listen to so many recordings. And I don't usually have a chance to call in because of my schedule and, like, having kids and, you know, getting time away from them. So it's like a real treat to be able to actually be on.
A time out.
Yeah,
to have
but
a
it's
time
like,
out
you know,
from the kids.
Like, I'm on the show. Like, I feel like a star. You know, it's a so there are a couple of things mm-hmm. I'll just why I called. So in the email class, I think the last response was, why don't you call into the radio show? And so that's what I'm doing, is calling into the radio show
good.
To talk to you about it. And I feel really happy about doing that. You know, that
uh-huh.
you said call
yeah.
into the radio show, and then I called into the radio show. So that's
yes,
part of,
yes.
I think, you know, yeah.
You're
you know,
doing
it's
your
like
part.
Feeling, yeah, I feel like I am doing my, you know, there's a thing that I'm suffering over, and I'm doing the things I can do in order to get out of the suffering. And I feel really good about that.
Yes, yes, exactly. To get out of it, not, as Michael and I were just talking about, not to noodle about it, but actually
yeah.
to extricate yourself. Yes, very good. All right.
Yeah.
What?
And so the thing I've been looking at is in an argument, mainly with my husband, uh-huh. in arguments, because it's not really about a particular argument. It's more like the process I get into whenever I'm in an argument.
Hmm.
And what it is, it feels like, I think I sort of, like, I get into this place where it feels really important what it is that we're talking about. And that's how I know I'm identified. Because when I'm not identified, it's like the particulars of what we're talking about aren't the main point, because it turns into being like about being right and defending a position. And so it actually, now that I'm saying it out loud, it isn't actually about the thing that we're talking about. It's about winning. And what that means.
Can I ask you about this?
Yeah.
Is it, so there is what you're talking about. So it could be groceries or the kids or anything, right? But does this happen with things that are particularly important to you or to him or to, is there a constant that you see with it, or is it just kind of you two have developed a habit of getting on opposite sides of things and then arguing about it?
You know, it's a really good question, and I'll have to look at it. Like, it feels like it can be when it's important to me or when it's important to him. Like, if it feels like I'm because what it feels like whenever I get into that position is that I'm being accused of something. So if something is really important to him, he's coming from, like, a hurt or identified place, and I feel the message I'm getting is, you messed up, person. Then
you have
it becomes
me.
Important. Yeah.
Yeah,
it becomes important to me. The interesting thing was this weekend, he got very upset about something, and I didn't go to that place I usually go to, and I was just, I didn't go there. So maybe I just didn't go there, which was really, really, I think has to do with the email class for sure.
Yeah. Well, you've been looking at it, right? I mean, you've been bringing a lot of conscious awareness to the subject. So yeah, I'm not surprised that you would have a different relationship with it.
Yeah.
And so what was it like when the same thing happened, but you didn't go to the same place?
I felt more solid, if that makes sense, because I felt like I was able to say what I wanted to say, but it wasn't about the argument, you know, if you know what I mean. It was about, no, that's not what's going on. No, that's not what I said. Like, this is what is going on for me. Like,
this is my reality.
You know, it wasn't. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I understand that's what you think happened, but no, that's not what was happening. You know, it was just felt more solid. I didn't feel like
without getting upset and needing to attack or defend or. And how was he with that? Was he able to hear you?
Not really. No, I mean but I think part of it is being okay with him having whatever reaction he's having.
Because
I feel like that part of it is like, because I think part of the conversation is he shouldn't be asking you, he should not get so upset over it, you know, all that kind of stuff helps pull me into getting identified.
Yes. So I think you just hit a point of great wisdom there. So instead of making it about you, you were able to let him make it about him.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it.
So he could talk about what was going on with him. You could listen to him. You weren't taking it personally because it wasn't your experience. And so because you weren't taking it personally, there's no reason to defend yourself. It really has nothing to do with you, right? It's his process. He's upset, and it can be okay with you that he's upset and he gets to express himself and you listen to him because you care about him and you want him to feel heard and cared about.
Yeah, it's like with my kids, they get upset about something, I'm like, it's, you know, in my head, I'm like, it's healthy for them to experience the full range of human emotions. Like, you know, they allow them to experience those things, you know, And with my husband, though, I want him, I feel like
he should know better, shouldn't he?
Cut off the ends there, yeah. And probably the same thing with myself, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
That's really helpful the way you said that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and for you to make that connection, that because you have different standards for you than your kids, because you should know better, and and so you would have the same standards for him. So, because you were both brainwashed in the same
programmed way,
right? Programmed. And so with the kids, you can see, well, that's not helpful. That doesn't feel very good. And that might be really a wonderful opening for you to practice that with him, and also down the road to encourage him, assist him to be that way with you.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's interesting because, like, again, the thing I tell my older son about my younger son is, you know, kids learn from imitation, but I think people do, you know, adults do too. Like, he's probably not going to learn by me telling him that he should be more, you know, allow me to experience the full range of emotions. But if I model that might have a better chance of actually, first of all, I get to experience whatever I'm experiencing, but there could be a bad byproduct.
There could be. We don't want to get attached to it, but there certainly could be. Yeah. So if the way you are with him changes, which is a result of the way you are with you changing.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure.
Because that whole idea that somebody who I can only guess cares deeply about you is actually your enemy, and you need to defend yourself from him. You know, come on, ego.
Yeah.
We're not letting you win this one. So you're different with how you are with you, which enables you to be different with how you are with him. And, you know, over time, things do tend to change.
Yeah, that's a great framing of it, like being deluded to believing that he's an enemy that I need to defend myself from, because it really does feel like that. It really does. And so I think having a mantra of recording to remind me that that's not true.
Right.
Well,
and you know, the way we talk about it a lot in practice, as you know, is ego wants to get you alone with it, right? So that it is your primary relationship, not your husband, not your kids, not anybody else, just it. And so if it can keep you upset and believing that other people are out to get you and they want, well, you know, that's a big win for ego. So to realize that and realize that, well, actually, I'd rather have the person I'm going to go through my life with as a more intimate relationship than the one I have with egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow, thank
that's
you,
what
Sherry.
Gets
this
introduced.
This is really helpful. I feel like it definitely brings me to the next step of where to how to practice with this.
Good. And I'm glad you didn't try to do it in an email class, because we would have both been writing volumes.
All
right.
No, I think it's helpful, like, both ways. You know, it's like the different modalities of practice, you know?
Yep. And we laid out the framework, but then I think we got to the point of realizing, there might be more to look at than is going to happen in these 6 exchanges. So, good. Well,
thank
great
you,
to get to talk with you about it. Thank you.
Really great.
Good night.
Great to hear your voice. Thanks. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Anna. And so many great points in there, Sherry. And I love the one about not taking it personally, which is quite a skill to have in an argument.
Oh, it
so,
really is.
it's impressive.
It's a lot of practice, isn't it?
Yes.
It's a lot of practice. And, you know, Michael, it's saying that, and connecting it with what Anna was saying, it's really important to make those recordings. You know, to acknowledge how difficult it is, to acknowledge the successes, the in quotes wins, you know, when I didn't fall for it and I did stay conscious and I was aware and how that went. It's really important to give a lot of attention to
to the kinds of changes that we make as we practice awareness.
Yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Yeah.
And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. It's Gabriel.
Hey, Gabriel.
Hey, Gabriel. What's going on?
Oh, man, I'm kind of going through it now. My best friend just got a diagnosis of colon cancer. Yeah, and you know, what I want to look at is I've always been this person that has an easy time like expressing himself and saying what's going on and feeling and all that, and you know, her husband isn't like me, and she isn't as much like me, and I know she's the one with the diagnosis, and I want to be here for her, and I just want to kind of let her be in charge of how much she shares, but, like, I think that that's becoming difficult for me, like, to, because it's like, I think they're so frightened, and I project that they can be alone with ego a lot and all of that stuff, and, like, I want to be mm-hmm. there, but I don't want to force myself.
Right. You don't want to become an additional problem that they're dealing with.
Right.
Yeah, you want to be helpful, loving, kind, supportive, present, not a difficulty. Yeah.
Right. And and so I'm just like, it's highlighting that aspect of like my way of being for me that like I tend to want to get people to like open up more, and I'm not doing it now, so I can record about that success for me, because I tend to be kind of like go in there and have people like just, I can be very like express yourself, and I don't want to be like that this time. And
right. Yeah. Well, and Gabriel, are you able to use your recording and listening practice to take care of the part of you who wants to be that way?
Am I able to? I've been doing it like for weeks, like nonstop. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a very strong part of me. Like I'm a voice teacher for a living, and I think it parallels that. Like I'm helping people like sing and open and express, and I think it's so healthy and so good, and a lot of people would rather be quiet and, you know, like I said, you know.
That's right. Everybody isn't a voice teacher.
Yeah.
There's our clue, right?
Yeah.
People having, yeah, because for you, it's really helpful to express.
Yeah.
But for somebody else, it could be as painful to express, to be required to express something, as for you it's painful not to express.
Yeah, well, and that's what is, like, bringing this up, because her husband is basically, you know, sending me text messages and calling me, constantly telling me, like, if I want to shed a tear, not to do it in her presence, and...
Huh.
You know, because, yeah, that kind of stuff. So it's just, I feel like it's hard for me to not cry, you know, sometimes.
Yeah, well, Gabriel, is she saying that, or is just he saying that?
He's saying that, and I feel like she's, like, tagging along because he's, like, her protection or something, and so she's kind of following suit, and they both have this little script that everybody around them has to just be positive, which means, you know, kind of like to not be frightened or I was thinking about that.
Yeah, I know that approach.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking one time I heard you say that, like, when Jackie Kennedy found that her husband died, she was, like, in the news with, like, the kids and, like, being very stoic and not showing emotion, mm-hmm. and everybody was saying that that was good for the kids. And I'm with you. Like, I don't, why is that good? Like, mm-hmm. why is it good to not show, like, your humanity, you know? And
well, and Gabriel, I don't project that that's what's going on.
Okay.
Given that I could be completely wrong, but just the way you said that, there are a lot of people who have very strong belief system that the way to deal with something like that is to be completely positive. Never have a negative thought, never have a negative anything. And so if that's where they're coming from in this, it's not so much about humanity for them. It's a belief that only being positive is a way to turn this around. So,
yeah.
If that's what they have going on, then, yeah, it would be, they would feel possibly intruded upon or undermined or sabotaged in some way if their approach is not respected.
Yeah, well, yeah, mm-hmm. I'm just being very challenged by that because I don't know what a negative thought is. In that regard, I mean, there's I think a natural kind of fear and concern that comes up, but I don't see that as a negative thing. I think that's
right.
Natural.
Right, right, and yet many people do consider anything other than smiling.
Yeah,
and saying good things is negative. Obviously, I don't agree with that perspective because that's just the duality that ego lives in. And yet, we know that there are people who feel that way and believe it very strongly. And so again. I think it leaves you, of course, is needing to take care of you so that you can do your best to show up the way they're asking you to show up.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which might argue for short visits.
Yeah. Yeah, short visits and short phone calls, which is mm-hmm. not the norm.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I'm just going to have to...
And it'll be interesting, too, to see how it unfolds. You know, it sounds like it's fairly
new.
Yeah,
it's very new. Yeah.
And so, give it time because I'm sure they're in shock and just trying to feel their way through this. And, again, it's what we were talking about with Anna. You know, we don't want to make somebody else's life circumstances about us.
Right. Yeah, and that's the gift in this for my practice. It's like I feel like I'm growing up a lot really fast through this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's what these things can do for us if we have a practice, right?
Yes, because you need to be with you the way you want to be with her.
Yeah, and it's showing me how the way I am with others is the way I am with myself. It's what you were just saying before.
Mm-hmm.
And ego is so good at hiding that from us that it's not mm-hmm. so much about the way we're being with others. It really starts with the way we're being with ourselves because
it's
all projection, yeah.
Yes. And... even though, we don't like to think of it this way because we have to recognize how egocentric we are, but all of what we do for other people is to take care of ourselves.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Yes.
And that's okay. It's just helpful to recognize it so that when somebody has a different idea, we can realize, well, they get to do that. They get to be first in their life. That's okay.
Yeah, and when we're super loving and compassionate with ourselves, then there's no harm that can be done. It's just when we're self-hating that it becomes an issue. out there, but yes, when we're loving in here, we're loving out there.
That's right. That's right. And loving doesn't necessarily take a particular form.
Right.
So if we know someone is getting through by being stoic, then being unconditionally loving will be being stoic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really helpful to talk about it. I feel like few people would understand. So that's it's nice to have Sangha.
It really is, isn't it? Yeah. We're very lucky. We were talking about that, in fact, just the other day, but what a gift it is to be with people who actually understand what we're talking about. Just that.
That's definitely something that keeps me very happy and very grateful to know that I have that. Because, you know, I didn't have that for many, many years.
Well, and you've lived in the world long enough to know almost nobody does.
Yeah. And it's so I feel super lucky, and Thanksgiving is coming, and so that's my main thing of gratitude.
Giving thanks.
Me
too.
So thank you, Sherry.
Take care of yourself, Gabriel.
Okay. Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Gabriel. And that's such an excellent point, Sherry, that we have this group of people that we can have these kinds of conversations with. It's just extraordinary.
It really is. You know, just with the two conversations that we've had so far, me and thee, just being with people who know to look to ourselves.
Yes.
You know, when something is going on with somebody, we're not looking through conditioned, well, sometimes we are, but our practice is not to look through conditioned mind, but to be with someone watching what's going on with us, not believing that it's true, but seeing it as a reaction. And that's just enormous.
It's enormous. It's enormous to turn it back inward and see what's going on here and recognize that that's the only place that I have any chance at all.
Yes. And then, of course, we really up our chances of being all right with what's going on with somebody else. Right?
Yes.
Again, that I don't need to make it about me because what I'm getting out of the relationship is a chance to see what goes on with me, how I cause myself to suffer, right? Not to, get into somebody else's, have opinions about what somebody else is doing. And that's just, that is difficult for most people even to understand as a concept.
Let alone to practice and execute.
Yeah, to practice. Yeah, to live in it. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, wonderful. Mm-hmm. And Sherry, we are going to break here and hear from our RNL training program, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
All right, sounds good.
All right.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. RL is based on a radical idea that rather than being lost in a conversation and conditioned mind, we can live in a conversation about what's true, what's real, what's arising in life in the moment. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report that finding refuge in my own voice and strengthening the awareness of the mentor is both transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply email rltrainer@livingcompassion.org. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence with the support of recording and listening.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Sherry, as you well know, there's a great app, iPhone app, for recording and listening. And it's called Practice Recorder. And it's on sale in the iPhone's App Store.
Created by someone who absolutely adores recording and listening, right?
Yes.
It's not somebody who knew what to put in there, so it would work for us.
Yeah, and all the rest of us benefit from it. It's great. And here's our next caller. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Rico.
Hey, Rico.
Hey, Rico.
Hi. I didn't know I was going to get through. Wow.
Well,
hello,
see there.
Sherry. Hello, Michael.
Hi there.
Good to hear you.
Well, yeah, you can say that, boy. So I have an anniversary coming up where it's 2 years where they said I cut it pretty close before I was checking out of this hotel.
Not going to be here for any more anniversaries?
No. It was 2 years ago when they told me.
Yeah.
I was cutting it pretty close. And I have this quote printed on my memory about the most authentic of all prayers is, thank you. Thank you. And I have to tell you, I have not wasted my time these past 2 years with thinking about the past. And so it's Thanksgiving and people are saying thank you and finding ways to say thank you. And I'm just here to say thank you.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Just thank you. Thank you to everything. Thank you to everybody. Thank you to all that is, that which is. Thank you for this, for that, for everything.
Thank you for the profound good fortune to showing up in a bookstore in San Rafael some years ago to meet this radical speaker. What was she saying? Do you remember
that? That was a long time ago. That's the one that I think, if I'm remembering that correctly, that's the one where I found out that I had been talking about recording and listening for years, and I thought it was a brand new idea.
Wow. Well, so I just was reading the New York Times, and somebody in the White House just pardoned a turkey. That's kind of a tradition.
Uh-huh.
And it just triggered something in me about, I think the last 2 years I've really worked at pardoning myself for believing the voices of self-hate. Oh, God, I really believe that. Oh, well, I pardon you. It's okay. You didn't know.
That's right. If we had known better. And of course, again, we're programmed to believe that mistakes are possible. And we just had an email class, and somebody quoted from a sign or billboard or something they had seen. There are no shortcuts. Why assume you should be there already?
Yeah.
Something along those lines. And that's
really?
It. You know, we're just so trained to believe such nonsense. And it just takes us a while to get it that it's nonsense.
Which leaves me with nothing but compassion. just dripping.
Yep.
Dripping with. So I have a 16-year-old granddaughter who's very, very bright, very bright. And she already has a long list of literary credits, and she's been on national television a couple times. And her father, for the fifth time since he's been with my daughter, has changed his name legally.
Fifth time?
That's cool. You know, that's all right. I don't have to call you today. I mean, this week, what should I call you? And but he takes it seriously, so we can't play with that. But my granddaughter calls me and she says, you know, I don't want to change my name because. And I said, and she said, well, why would you? She said, well, it's a really big point of tension in the house. And I had nothing but
it's not his first name; it's his last name.
His last name, yes.
And everybody needs to also go along with it.
Well, my daughter, who I think saw the writing on the wall, went back to her name, which is fortunate because she has, in fact, been recipient of all sorts of national awards under her original name, so that's good. But in the whole process of listening, the years and years of practice and kindness for this human being goes to her and to her father. Mm-hmm. And all the training and recording and listening and reflective listening buddy practice. And I just had nothing but compassion for everybody involved. There's nobody right. There's nobody wrong.
That's right. Yep. Yep. So, we just get to that. Okay. Okay. All right. Here we are. Okay. What else can you do?
And the whole, it's like I feel kind of teary because I just see just the oneness, you know, just all the oneness and pretending to be a separate human being. So wait a second, like, who knows? And I don't know, like, it's a miracle I'm here and thank for the technology and okay and how do we say thank you?
Uh-huh.
I say thank you by kindness to everybody.
Uh-huh.
Everybody.
Uh-huh. And yes is also a synonym for thank you, isn't it?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And something with this chap, you know, that's what it is. It's a way we can say thank you to that which is. Okay. Yes. That's what you want to do. I mean, it's harmless. You know, I mean, people may struggle with it or have attitudes about it or whatever, but you know, it's okay. Yeah. Sure. I'm not going to stop loving you. I'm not going to stop caring about you. I got my version of name changing every so often.
I had a name changed by somebody you know about, I don't know, 45 years ago in India. Rajneesh.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't really change much. I mean, you think it's going to change much, but okay.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it can. You know, if it's a if a person is really ready for it and they you know, look at it and say, you know, I'm not that person anymore. I don't, every time I hear that name, I identify with that person and I don't want to do that anymore. I'm going to try something different. It can be helpful, but if we don't bring a lot of conscious awareness to it, it's just kind of like getting a new pair of shoes.
But when I get mail to me from the DMV, for example, and it says, da 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 da, this is the registration for your automobile. I'm thinking, God, that piece of paper really shortens who this being is. It's like, oh, the name. It's like, I can't, I don't know how to express that, but I don't believe, I mean, I know I'm not this name. And why should this guy
Rico
believe the conditioned voices that he's this new name or?
That's right. That it's going to be I have that going. Nothing about the name that I have now is the name that I was born with, the name on my birth certificate. And the Social Security folks have a different name from the name I have now. And so if it's any kind of official, not the DMV or people like that, because this is my name, the one I have now, but I'll periodically get a piece of mail addressed to this other person. And it's just kind of funny. Or I go somewhere official or somebody calls and they call me by that name. It's like, oh, huh, yeah, I can be anybody.
So speaking of names, this character Rajneesh gave me a name, and it was such a beautiful ceremony. You're kneeling, and then he touches you, and he says, your new name is the King of Love. Oh, okay, cool. That's cool, all right. And I have to say, Sherry, it's taken me, like, I think it was 45 years ago, and it's taken this long to grow into the kind of love he was talking about that we are all capable of.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it. Not
yeah, so,
time
oh, my gosh. Way back then, he saw something I didn't see. Gosh, I could have suspected that.
But it's like, not that I'm the king of love, but love is king.
Let's just
live with the kingliness of love, the nobility of love.
Yeah. Yeah.
Power of
the
love.
Divinity.
The divinity of love. So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, that's it. So thank you, Sherry.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you. Glad you're still having anniversaries.
Still kicking.
Yep.
Remember that?
Right.
The TV show, it was on Sunday nights when we were little kids, and it was sponsored by Timex Watch. And and the ad says, Timex takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
Words to live by.
No. Thank you, Sherry. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Rico. Good night.
Good night. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rico. And Sherry, we have time for at least one more caller here.
All right.
Here we go. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. It's Tracy.
Hey, Tracy.
Hi.
What's going on?
I feel like this show is every caller is me, and I know that place of being in shock with a diagnosis and witnessing a really fast death and experiencing the huge loss. And I'm, you know, resonating with the caller talking about kind of transcending relationship and not taking it personally and really honoring, like, one's own process with something. And so I think it's interesting, I almost have a question to ask, and I almost don't know. It's like I can see how conditioning is getting a hold of it, but there's like this real curiosity about karma and what is my karma attracting and I keep getting that it feels like this year, without going to a victim place, it's like, wow, it's been just so much of life choosing to show that I'm not in control and places I cling and attachment. And it feels like each one of them has been a practice opportunity and, you know, getting to that place of like, I'm okay. I'm with the breath. I'm okay. I'm okay. And after this last loss, I was like, wow, do we keep getting okay and life like ups the ante? And I thought, well, that doesn't seem kind. That seems like self-hate. That doesn't seem kind. And then, you know, even thinking about relationship, it's like, it just feels like, you know, I've been in relationship where I haven't transcended ego. You know, I still take it personally, and I'm, you know, working through that. And it's like, do we keep just getting what we need to transcend? And I don't know.
Isn't that what it feels like? I mean, the very fact that you can articulate it that way, I think, is a big clue.
Yeah, and I think that, yeah, I mean, yeah, and this like last loss was, it came as a real surprise. Mm-hmm. And it was like that. Like one thing I kept saying, like I could get through anything as long as I have this thing. And then I was like, oh, my God, really? You're going to take this thing? And so it was like, yeah, we're going to take this thing, you know, so you know you can be okay. And, like, that voice felt like ego. And I know that my experience is, like, I am going to be okay. So I guess I just need to keep any.
Well, you know, Tracy, the hardest part of this, of what you're looking at, to me, and probably to just about everybody, is to realize, again, how personally everything is taken. So,
yeah.
And this is, it is almost impossible to, I think, to consider this, but let's do it anyway, okay? That if you were not a separate self, what would these life circumstances look like?
It would just look like a human being going through this like range of being sentient, of like incredible love and incredible depth and incredible grief when you know, an object of love is not there. And I mean, the love is still there.
That's right. That's right. And so without all that emotion, what would it be like? Because, and so let me add another piece to it, okay? So people all over the world, well, I mean, in our very own country, you know, what is it, 1,500 people are dying a day of one disease. Of one disease, right? It doesn't count all the other ways that people are dying. Then there's all the creatures that are dying. Then there are all the plants that are dying. Then there are, and basically we're fine with that.
Yeah.
Because it's not happening to me.
Yeah.
And so the only thing that's really happening is that it's happening to me.
Yeah.
So if I have the same response to what happens to me as I have to what happens to everybody else, would there be a problem? Wouldn't it just be kind of clear that, yeah, that's how it goes?
Yeah.
But because it's me, because it's my attachment, right? It's what I'm projecting onto this one particular person or this one particular animal or this one particular house or this one particular car, this one particular pair of shoes. They seem to be big in my life right now. That's what makes it have a meaning. It's mine. And without that mine, without that I at the center of everything, then it would be very clear that all of this just happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you went to a movie, you can sit there and watch that movie because you know it's not happening to you. Now, you might get your heartstrings plucked once in a while or that sort of thing, but you know it's not happening to you. But if you couldn't tell the difference, and you thought it was all happening to you, it would be a very different experience.
Yeah.
And so you said something that I think is the most salient piece of information in this whole thing, right? So the object of the love is no longer present, but the love is.
Yeah.
Nothing has actually changed.
Yeah.
Except a physical presence that was the object of that love. And very often, and this is something you can just look at for yourself, very often we lose sight of the love focused on the object.
Yeah.
But there's really no point in the object except the experience that you're having.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that object is just like every other object, and everybody's got their objects, and everybody clings to their object and thinks their object is the most important one. But we can see, we begin to see that the real issue is me. I.
Yeah.
So when we talk about karma, without that, there's no karma. There's nothing going on except life unfolding. But when I make it about me, then everything has to be in relation to me, and those relationships are going to be viewed through the ego that I think of as me. And so all those meanings get assigned to all of those things. But it doesn't, it's not them. It's me. Is this all hanging together at all?
Oh, it's so clear. It's like, it's so clear, and this is exactly what I needed to hear. Yeah, it's so clear. It's so, so clear. And I mean, the irony, I don't know if it's the irony or just the, it's just practice of, you know, like laughing about a month ago thinking, oh, I can love a spoon. Like, I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can find love anywhere. And so I think I'm getting the thread that I just was not seeing between, you know, relationship and objects, and that really it's just, I've known the words, but there's something about hearing it articulated that I got that I had that, you know, I feel the experience of it, you know, life unfolding versus there a me taking it personally. And like, it's like, even sometimes the language even sounds funny because it doesn't feel like there's a me taking, like I didn't take this last death personally, but it affects me. And just seeing how, I mean, everything affects me, like, you know, watching these birds die in migration, you know, affected me. And
That's right.
There's nothing wrong with that. Like, it's okay to be affected. It's okay to love. It's okay to, like, feel the heartbreak. And so not to, like, make anything wrong with that either.
Yes. But one other little piece of it, Tracy, one other little piece, that it's easy for us to get focused, again, to get focused on the loss, on the heartbreak, right, on death versus life. And yet, if we begin to focus on what our actual experience is, then we begin to realize that it's actually the love, and that the focusing on a loss is, it confuses us, because the love becomes form, and when the form is no longer that form, it feels like something has been lost, but it actually hasn't.
Yeah, I could see that. It was, in fact, this late afternoon, I went for a walk. The lighting was super pretty, and I listened to a few of the quote-unquote interviews that I had with this little being in the last few days, just around, you know, the love, And like, it just takes me right back to that place, and there's so much joy there, and that's there, and it will just, you know, that's, it was funny, I interviewed her, like, what do you want me to know? And she was like, you know, the love you feel for me is who you are, and that's not going away, and, you know, get out. She's like, get out. Go spread it.
Yeah.
And so I can hear
that. And that we can, we can lose sight of that, right? If we think something has happened to that because there's no longer a form that is visible to us.
Right. Right. We just might have to practice a little harder to access it, but we have the tools to access it.
That's right. And
I don't even want to say work harder. It just,
well, keep in mind that ego, that illusion of being separate, is really invested in this sort of thing. It is not interested in oneness. It's not interested in the unconditional. It wants to be focused on content, on form.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. But as
so
you
no
said,
time to lose.
That's right. Well, and she wouldn't have been with you on that walk anyway.
Mm-mm.
Right? And yet you had as much present of her presence as if you were sitting on the couch together.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I know where my attention needs to stay.
Mm-hmm. Right here, right now.
Right here, right here. Right here, right now, and going back and listening to those recordings feels helpful, just that it takes me right there. Like I'm really getting to hear from those recordings that are more from experience versus about experience. And I just, those like little interviewing recordings are just priceless.
yes. And that's where we want to keep our attention, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And because that's possible all the time, right? You can interview the light. You can interview the trees. You can interview the path that you're walking. You can interview your shoes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And realize that in that, There is nothing separate.
Yeah, I get it now. Mm-hmm. Not that I get it, but I'm tracking. Get it.
Yep.
Closing in. I still. Mm-hmm. Yeah. At least I know where my attention needs to stay.
That's right. That is exactly right. And especially Tracy to eschew those conversations about what is this about and why, and so is everything that's going to be taken away from me so that I not good to indulge.
So that's just karma creating the more separateness versus the
that's right.
Yeah, okay. I'm mm-hmm. with you. I got it now.
Mm-hmm. All right, good. All right.
Okay.
Keep taking
thank
good
you
care
so
of
much.
You. All right. You're so
thank
welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night. Good night, Michael.
Good night, Tracy. Thanks for joining us, Tracy. And wow, Sherry, another amazing conversation. And an amazing show.
We just gotta love Sangha.
We do too. The mm-hmm. one love, as you said, the unconditional.
Mm-hmm. That's it. All right. Thank you, sir. So appreciate it. Yes. Have a great holiday if I don't talk to you before.
You too. And to all of Sangha also.
To all of Sangha. All the world.
All the world.
All of Sangha. Same thing. Yeah. All right. Good night, Michael.
Good night, Sherry.